Hi, everyone, and welcome to the fourth episode of the SDG series of Between Two Flags. I'm your host, Sophia Mirzai, and today I am joined by Megan Quinn. A little bit of background on our guest for today. Megan grew up in the industrial landscape of Northern England and didn't fully realize her passion for nature until she moved to Canada in 2004. After graduating from ecosystem management technician and technology programs at Sir Sandford Fleming College, she worked a variety of jobs in the environmental field with a focus on the nonprofit sector. Since 2018, Megan has worked as the coordinator of conservation biology for Eastern Ontario with the Nature Conservancy of Canada, where she is responsible for the stewardship of over 20,000 acres of land. Megan also sits on the Young Professionals Committee of the Canadian Committee for the International Union for the Conservation of Nature. And on top of all of that, Megan is also an impact mentor for UNA Canada's Generation SDG program, where she advocates for authentic youth involvement in sustainable development. And it is through her role as a mentor that Megan and I have become acquainted with one another. And I am absolutely thrilled to be welcoming you to our podcast today, Megan. Welcome, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
I want to start off with a question for you because I'm super curious. When I read your bio, I was like, what on earth does it mean to be a steward of over 20,000 acres of land? Can you please explain that to me?
Well, I think that I have the best job in the world. As a conservation biologist, I get to be outside all the time. My office one day is a forest and the next day it's a wetland. And then I might be in a boat and sometimes I'm entering data into a spreadsheet. But really what I'm doing is I am working to steward the over 20,000 acres of land that we have in Eastern Ontario that the Nature Conservancy of Canada manages. Everything from searching for species at risk to removing invasive species, all of that fantastic on the ground work that really goes a long way to helping our planet.
How did you find out that this is something that you were interested and passionate about? Where did it really all begin for you?
So as a conservation biologist, I'm really passionate about protecting our most valuable ecosystems. I think also being an immigrant to Canada has really given me a unique perspective on how fortunate Canadians are in many senses. Growing up, I wasn't surrounded by vast tracts of forest and wetland. And one experience I had that truly changed my life, and I think really set me on my path to advocating for youth involvement in nature, happened shortly after I moved to Canada. I had a friend who invited me to go on a camping trip to Algonquin Park, and it was my first time sleeping in a tent, my first time trying to paddle a canoe. But the bit that really sticks out to me is the moment I realized this was the first time in my entire life that I was stood somewhere and couldn't see something created by humans. And that was such a powerful and humbling experience and really inspired me to want to get involved to protect these incredible spaces. And I think I'm living proof of what can happen when you give young people access to nature. And I'm incredibly privileged to have had that experience. So I think that's really what drives me to try and be a mentor for other youth. I truly believe the world would be a better place when we elevate youth voices and make nature more accessible to everybody.
You're causing me to think back to the first time that I went camping, and I had a very similar experience, I would say. There's something quite surreal and serene and wonderful about being in a space where you're completely surrounded by the natural world. And I feel that oftentimes that is when I feel most at home and most embodied in myself. Would you agree with that?
You can talk about the experience all you want, but unless you've actually been able to really immerse yourself into it, there's something just so powerful and so calming about it. It's one of my favorite places to be, is just completely surrounded by nature.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, you talked about your interest in helping other youth be stewards of the environment as well. And how I know you is as a mentor, an impact mentor for the Generation SDG program. So how did you come about becoming a mentor for that program? What drove you to do that?
So as I said, this has always been my passion. So when this opportunity with the United Nations Association of Canada came up, I felt like it was the perfect fit to be able to share the knowledge that I had and all the great mentors that I'd had in my life growing up and still have to this day, to be able to give that back to the conservation community and help to build up the next generation of environmental advocates. It just felt like it was the perfect fit for me.
Now, what is it like to be a mentor for change makers, you know, young people who are interested in getting involved in their communities and making a difference in some way? What is that like, and how do you go about bringing the best from your mentees?
Every mentee needs a different approach. I'm really lucky to work with three fantastic ambassadors who are working on three projects that couldn't be any more different. I'm working with some ambassadors who are super independent and want me to just check in on their projects. And for them, I'm fairly hands-off, but make sure I'm always available to guide and provide resources. And then other mentees that I work with really need more structure and reassurance about their projects. And I don't think either way is better or will necessarily make a project better. I think it's just different people need different things. So something that I always try to bring to my work as a mentor is an openness to approach my guidance from a place of understanding. I'm just as happy to play the role of cheerleader as I am to help draft a budget or ask the hard questions. And just this whole experience has just had so many rewarding aspects for me that it's just been incredible overall.
Yeah, I really like that you seem to be taking an individualized or sort of like a tailored approach depending on the needs of your mentees. Now, the other question I had as well, because you mentioned that your mentees are all working on completely different issues, is there anything that you've learned from your mentees about a certain issue that you might have not been familiar with before?
I think from my mentees, what I've really learned is just how broad we can approach climate action. Climate action doesn't necessarily have to be planting a new forest. Climate action can be educating people about autism. Climate action can be trying to convince a group of youth to preserve water. And climate action can also be working to pull together resources that can help other educators teach others. Those are the three projects that I am lucky to mentor, and just the wide breadth that we're dealing with here is just super cool and has really inspired me to take a look at my life and what I'm doing in it as well.
Absolutely. I like that, you know, you can have a climate piece in whatever you're doing, right? That, and it kind of shows how the SDGs are interrelated, right? Like if you're making progress on education or perhaps working with groups to raise awareness around autism, you are also inadvertently or indirectly making progress on other issues as well. So I like the way that you explain that. Now, another thing I really wanted to ask you, because you mentioned climate action, what is the role of youth in climate action? Because what I've noticed and observed over the years is that really it's youth who are spearheading this movement. Like youth really are at the forefront of it. What is it about youth that makes us such great flag bearers for the climate movement?
I'm going to draw on just something great that I've learned from this whole experience. And what I didn't expect is how much more confidence being a part of this program would give me. As a young woman in conservation, I experience a lot of imposter syndrome. And in talking with many of the other youth around me, that's something that's shared by youth in all walks of life. I was very young when I took on the coordinator role at the Nature Conservancy of Canada, and I found it intimidating. When you're the youngest one at the table, it can be really hard to raise your voice. But at the same time, once you learn to do that, and once you get the confidence that you belong at that table and you have something valuable to say, I think there's no limit to how much youth can do. And not only has this program helped me achieve my goals, but I'm watching other youth as they figure out their own paths in life. And just that unbridled energy, I think, that youth can bring to the climate change problem is something that needs to be captivated and it needs to be nurtured, because it's not necessarily easy, especially as a young person, to be able to stand up against these issues and feel as though you can make a difference.
I can certainly relate to that as well. The idea of having imposter syndrome while you're also trying to make, advancements in your community towards issues that you care about. I did a whole degree on human rights, and I often felt very overwhelmed by just the amount of issues that exist in a local context, in a national context, in a global context. And I never felt like I was really doing enough. And I'm sure that's something that you can also relate to. Do you find ways to kind of assure yourself or bring balance in your life when you do have those moments where you're not feeling like you're doing enough?
I'm a very motivated and driven person, and if I'm not careful, I'm definitely at risk for burning myself out and taking on too much, because I care about it so much. I'm very lucky that I have a job and I have volunteer opportunities that I'm really passionate about. But at some point you do have to balance that. As a competitive horse rider, riding and connecting with nature through my bond with my horse really helps to keep me grounded. When I'm in a training session, I have to leave the weight of the world behind me because how I'm feeling affects my horse. If I'm anxious when I start riding, that's going to transfer to him too. So I really have to pay attention to how I'm feeling. In terms of trying to balance everything in my life, I also like to keep learning and trying new things. And a great example just this week, for years, I've always wanted to try snowboarding. I would watch it in the Olympics and just be fascinated by it. But growing up, I didn't really have any snow where I lived, so that wasn't really an option for me to try. But just this week, I had my first snowboarding lesson, and it was incredible and just a wonderful way to just unwind and try and not think about things, because I think we all get stuck if you think too much about all the problems that are going on. You're almost paralyzed to be able to do anything about it. I'm very lucky I can focus a lot too in my work on some of the tangible things that I'm doing. As a conservation biologist, I'm working on the ground directly with some of our most vulnerable species and ecosystems. So I get to see the impact that I'm personally having. At the end of the day, if I have planted a tree or removed an invasive species, I can go to sleep knowing that I've made the world a little bit better. And I find that that helps too. But you don't have to be a conservation biologist to do that. There are plenty of volunteer opportunities to make a difference, whether that's with the Nature Conservancy of Canada, whether that's looking at your own back garden to seeing what you can do, or with another great organization doing work across the country. I find trying to focus on those little tangible moments of joy really help to put things into perspective for me.
Well, first of all, I want to quickly comment on the fact that you tried snowboarding for the first
Yes!
time. That's so exciting. I heard that it is so much fun, but to be quite honest, I am terrified of even trying to attempt to snowboard. But I'm equally always impressed when I watch people snowboard. I think it's so cool that you're just kind of gliding on snow so effortlessly. It looks effortless, but I'm sure there's a lot of skill that goes into it.
I did fall over a lot, and it was one of those things where I felt as though I'd put it off for so long, and I thought almost I was too old now. I should have learned to do it when I was a child, and I didn't, but I went and did it anyway. So what counts is that I'm doing it now. It doesn't matter that I should have done it years ago. I'm doing it now. And I think just keeping that fresh perspective is something that we can take into the climate action movement. There's many things we should have done years ago and we didn't, but we can do them now and still have an impact.
Absolutely, yes. Because sometimes you kind of get stuck on old patterns or old habits, right? But every day is an opportunity to become more eco-conscious, to be more involved in climate action in your own personalized way that works for you. And that we don't need to sort of be hard on ourselves about our past decisions. I used to never think about my impact on the planet. But slowly, slowly, I started to learn more about how important it was to be conscious in that way. And I started to slowly implement personalized actions or lifestyle changes that were more in line with this idea of protecting the planet and caring for our environment, right? And it's also little things that matter. You don't need to, like you said, you don't need to be a conservation biologist doing this kind of work every single day. So I really like that you brought that part up as well. So, you know, we're talking a lot about climate action, you know, ways in which you take action in your everyday life, both on a personal and professional level. But do you think that climate action alone is enough to really avert this impending climate crisis that we have in front of us?
One of the reasons why climate change is such a complex problem is because it touches so many different things. You can't just point to one thing and say, yes, if we fix this, then everything will be okay. It's way more complicated than that. And something I love about the Sustainable Development Goals specifically is that it addresses this. There are 17 different goals that talk about everything from marine conservation to gender inequality. I don't think we'll get everybody on board with climate action by saying we should do it because it saves the whales. That works for me, it might work for you, but for somebody else, it could be hearing about how climate change disproportionately affects marginalized groups, or it might be the economic costs felt in areas that are more prone to natural disasters, which is the thing that gets them on board. I don't think we should discredit any reason that gets people to push for positive change, because if we do, then we exclude the people who really need to help us tackle the problem. You know, we need conservation biologists to fix the climate issues, but we also need lawyers and teachers and accountants, and we need everybody, and not everybody's path into this movement will be exactly the same. So I do think we have to broaden how we talk about some of these issues and how we communicate them.
Absolutely, because this is, you know, a collective issue, and so it needs to be addressed in a collective manner. And, you know, something as simple as droughts can completely leave a community distraught because it limits sort of the agriculture sector in a community. And so that's linked to food and nutrition, you know, which is then linked to our health, right? If we're not eating nutritious food, then we're not going to be healthy. But then it's also linked to things like job opportunities. People who are in the agriculture sector lose their jobs if there's a drought going on, especially if it's a long-term drought. And then you can even take it further and say that, well, you know, if people lose their jobs, they're not healthy, then how can they really be able to meaningfully access things like education, right? So, you know, you think about a drought, which is very much linked to climate change, it branches out and it affects so many different aspects of our lives, right? It touches everything. And so there's so many ways, as you said, to think about climate action and to take action on it in both direct and indirect ways. And ultimately, the SDGs are all interrelated. There's always a different lens that we can use to access the climate movement.
That is what gives me hope. You know, we have all of these problems. And if I tried to think about how to fix every single thing by myself, that would be impossible. It would be so overwhelming that I wouldn't do anything. But, you know, we have all these problems, but we have just as many strong, powerful, ambitious youth who are ready to take them on. So, you know, I see it as a positive that we're able to bring all these people together because we really need them.
Absolutely. Yes. We cannot do this alone. One small group is not enough. We need everybody. Now, I have another question. I find that at least in Western societies, I'm not so sure about other regions of the world, but our society has become more and more industrialized, as well as technologically advanced. And I think that this upwards trend, at least in my view, it seems to have a very negative correlation with our connection to nature. And I think that collectively, our relationship with nature is quite one-sided and, for lack of a better word, exploitative. We tend to view nature as something that is separate from us, as a separate entity altogether. And I think that that's part of the reason why many of us treat nature as if it's a means to an end. And we very rarely actually honor or protect it. For me, I think that nature is inseparable from me, but I think that collectively, it's something that is viewed as a separate entity. And so we are thus more inclined to kind of extract resources and, you know, exploit the environment around us. So bringing this back to a question for you, how can we go about re-establishing a deep connection with nature, especially for those of us who are stuck in concrete jungles, who might not have access to green spaces, to nature? How can we go about re-establishing that connection?
I use a lot of technology in my job, whether that's, you know, satellite images to be able to look at a site that I'm going to, or community science work through programs like iNaturalist and eBird. I think technology does a lot of really good things for the conservation world. But to talk about it more broadly, I think sometimes as a species, we can all be a bit guilty of thinking that there's only one right way to experience nature. But I think that's a really narrow viewpoint. And this is a concept that was first introduced to me by Chuck Adenabo from Future Ancestors. And it's just really stuck with me. Experiencing the Canadian wilderness is something that I think should be accessible to everyone. And there certainly are some major barriers for many groups, including Black, Indigenous people of color and those with disabilities. I think ultimately how you choose to connect with nature is very personal, and connecting with nature doesn't have to be a multi-day hike. You know, you can learn to identify trees on your street or look at the squirrels from your balcony. There actually is a remarkable amount of nature in the concrete jungle. And we often take ourselves out of that narrative, like you said, when we talk about nature, but we really are a part of it as well. And if walking your dog in the park while listening to a podcast is your way of connecting with nature, great. If you want to learn how to backcountry camp on a multi-day trip, I think that is just as valid as well. And honestly, it's something that I used to feel really guilty about. I had coworkers who would spend their weeks outside doing field work, and then on weekends, they would go on big canoe trips. And I started to think that I was a bad conservation biologist because my version of enjoying nature was different to theirs. I love going outside and reading a book under a tree, but I think that's just as valid of a way to connect with nature than, you know, going for a multi-day hike. Mm-hmm. And, you know, don't get me wrong, I love canoe trips, but I think if we can change this view that there's one single correct way to enjoy the outdoors, I think it would go a really long way in getting more people involved and also just helping people to make that first step who perhaps feel as though they've lost their relationship with nature.
Megan, I love your answer to this question. It's sparking up a couple of other ideas in my mind. You know, you talked about going backcountry camping or going on a three-day hike or whatever. But really what I think is what connects you to nature is whether you're able to be present with it. Whether that means you're sitting under a tree and you're enjoying the sunlight filtering through the leaves, or you know, the wind brushing up against your skin, or the sparkling of the water. It really doesn't matter how extravagant of a scenery you have, but rather whether you're able to be present with it.
I agree. I think, you know, even today, I spend a lot of my winter writing reports and working in spreadsheets and not necessarily spending a lot of time outside, but I brought my laptop to my window this afternoon, and while I was typing away at a report, I was watching the chickadees outside and watching the robins and just taking the time to, you know, inject little bits of nature, what is accessible to me and what I'm able to do at this moment. I think if everybody did a little bit more of that, we'd be in a much better place.
I agree with you on that. And with that being said, my very last question for you is, what kind of advice would you give to others who want to create change in their communities or address systemic issues?
I think the biggest piece of advice I would give to someone is to just go out there and try. For a personal example, I have always enjoyed public speaking, and over the years, I've loved being involved in different media interviews. I've given a couple of guest university lectures, but one thing I've always wanted to do, and I did it last month, is I gave my first keynote address at the Learning for a Sustainable Future Youth Forum, and something I never dreamed I would actually do, but I think actually through participating through many of these United Nations Association in Canada, you know, programs, you know, all of this stuff has just given me the confidence to go out there and do it. But I spoke on this exact topic of what advice would you give to people who are wanting to start projects in their community. And not only was it a first kind of stepping stone in some of my major career goals, which, you know, I'd love to have a seat at the table at a big major environmental conference and give keynotes. So it was not only that, but I really enjoyed, you know, giving some of that advice, which is it's important to start small. You might not be able to change the global narrative on climate change overnight or by next week, but you might be able to speak with your family and friends about an issue that you find important. You might be inspired to start a nature club at your school or do something like being an SDG ambassador or start a project based on one of the sustainable development goals. Because you never really know what your small local project is going to grow into, but your best chance of making it something big is to make sure you're starting with a solid foundation. And that includes not being afraid to ask for help. I think when we talk about youth a lot, we forget that we need support as well. So part of my work advocating for youth is making sure that we have those intergenerational supports, whether that is teachers, parents, professionals in the industry. Any insights that we can get into these youth projects not only help to build a sense of community, but really help to create change. And, you know, I'm a big proponent of the idea that the youth movement isn't just about youth. Youth are definitely leading the charge, but I think there's a place for everybody in this narrative.
Yeah, I think that that's vital, really, because it shouldn't be a burden for youth to adopt, right? They didn't create this problem, right? And so everybody really needs to be involved, whether that's teachers or mentors or even mentors like you. I think that that's really nice because they can look at someone who's made this part of their life and they have somebody to look up to, right? So having those models, I think, is really important. And I think that you're doing an incredible job of that in the Generation SDG program.
Thank you. That is incredible to hear. And I think if I could sum up, you know, everything from this experience, something that I've really learned is that as a mentor, I don't actually do a lot of teaching. Most of the work that I'm doing is just helping other youth and helping other people figure out what strengths they already have and just giving them a place to shine. So if I can impact just one person to feel as though they take up space in a room and that they belong there, then I can go to bed happy.
Yes, and you will definitely go to bed happy. So thank you again, Megan, for this really rich discussion with me. I hope that it's been as fun for you as it has been for me. It was lovely to hear from you about what it's like to be an SDG impact mentor, you know, what your personal passions are, a little bit of about your work as a conservation biologist, and some of the insights that you've learned over the years, and what advice you'd give to others who are interested in also making a difference. It's been such a lovely conversation. I hate that I have to wrap things up, but not to fret, for anyone who's interested in learning more about Megan's work, we will make sure to include her social media links. If you'd like, Megan, I'll give you 20 seconds to plug your socials if you'd like right now.
If anyone is interested in following along my journey of riding horses and knitting and saving the planet and trying to learn how to snowboard, you can follow me on Instagram. My handle is right2ride. That is WRITE2, and then RIDE. And I share all of my adventures as I go along.
Wonderful. And to learn more about UNA Canada, you can visit our website and follow us on social media using the links provided in the episode description. Thank you for listening today and stay tuned for more episodes in our SDG podcast series.